All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Kurt Kroon. I am a co-pastor at Cascade, and I am here with the delightful bearded one, Mr. Mike McCarg.
Hey, Kurt. So bearded now. Just so wildly, wildly bearded.
Yeah. I mean, it's not wild and untamed. It's actually quite shapely.
Thanks to the pandemic, I can't get to my barber safely.
Yeah.
So my first beard phase was what I call homeless chic. And it just, you know, it was just this mess. And then my hair was a mess. But the beard, I was like, worst comes worst with the beard. If I mess it up, I can just cut it super short and just let it grow out again.
Yeah. Great point.
So I watched a YouTube tutorial on shaping a beard, and it's like super easy. It's basically you take trimmers and go straight down the sides, and everybody's like, wow, your beard is shapely. Like, the thing that makes beards bad is this. And then you just shape the bottom, and then you're good. The hair, I ended up cutting my own hair too.
Wow.
And that was a little more fraught with risk, but it came out okay.
Looks good.
Everybody's learned new skills in a pandemic.
What I found out is my beard looks really bad right now in person. I'm in that like adolescent phase where I'm just out of like scruff, but it's not full beard yet. But it translates fine to Zoom.
It looks great on screen, yeah.
All I need is to look Zoom good, not in person good these days.
So. That's same here. The back of my haircut is terrible.
Doesn't matter.
Completely irrelevant. It's all people ever see me.
I love it. I love it. Hey, Mike, let's talk about spiral dynamics.
All right, I dig it.
Did we learn it same day, same time? Or did you have pre-existing knowledge of it?
No, I'd never heard of it.
Yeah. And that was, how long ago was that? Like 10 years ago? Is that too long?
It was 2012, I think May of 2012.
Yeah, I mean, you would know. I trust your memory over mine.
No, my memory of dates is terrible. I had to like go look at a bunch of emails and credit card transactions to build a timeline of my life to write a book. So I had to like get evidence of my own life to tell a story in the right sequence. It was definitely 2012, the month. I am not sure at all. It could have been April, could have been March. But I am high 90. Low 90s% certain it was between March and May in 2012.
I love that. So certainly 8 years ago, 8+ years ago, we learned about this whole thing called spiral dynamics. And so one of the things that's always really interesting is once you learn about spiral dynamics, you're like, oh, sweet. Let's dive into all the material and stuff that's written on there. And then as soon as you do, you're like, so we learned about it at a 2-day with Rob Bell event. Rob had kind of synthesized the data and shared it. And it gets you so pumped on it. And then you go research it and you're like, maybe I just want to go back to the way that Rob synthesized it.
Yeah, it gets you so pumped if you hear Rob talk about it.
yes.
It's a very different experience from hearing anyone else talk about it.
And so it's been hard to kind of do it. I love the way that you similarly synthesize data. And so we tried our best. And what was informing all this is feeling like this cultural moment when so many people are quarantined and primarily engaging with one another online creates a place where different V memes are. That is a primary place we're coming into contact. And so there seems to be a lot more. I don't know more. I'm trying to be very careful. COVID has not created issues. COVID has exposed issues. And so I feel like this time of COVID has exposed our divergent kind of operating structural V memes and the way that they are different, leading to kinds of divisiveness. And I'm just really interested in how you see these things play out. Like the example we used is with masks. People that make their medical decisions in a structural kind of orange framework, engaging with people that make their decisions in a structural blue framework. So they're like, Constitution says, I don't have to. And they're like, well, who cares? Medical science says we should be doing this. And that can lead into this kind of conflict. So I'm interested for you, correct anything I just said. extrapolate on that. But for you, how have you understood or seen it, or have you given any thought to how it's been playing out in quarantine?
Well, I started giving it thought when I realized you and I would talk about it together. Spider-Dynamics is like an interesting lens I use a lot less than I used to.
Yeah.
And mainly because it is like weird. And I don't mean weird as in bizarre. I mean weird as in the acronym Western Educated Industrialized. I can't remember all five of them, but it is definitely like what you get when an interdisciplinary team of affluent white people try to create a unified theory of human behavior. And so it is both brilliant, and I like to remember the lane it's in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a helpful reframe.
And one thing I remember that was really different. Well, there's a big, I don't know how much assumptions we're making about the people watching, what level of familiarity they have with Spiral Dynamics. I don't know if we're just like going deep immediately.
Let's go deep right now so you don't stop your train of thought, and then we'll do a quick overview.
This is in that lane. So in Spiral Dynamics, there's basically like Spiral Dynamics, and then there's like Integral Theory, which is like a riff on Spiral Dynamics from a separate person. And in post-evangelical spaces, Spiral Dynamics and Integral Theory get really conflated in ways that they should not be. And what I noticed about Integral Theory followers is that everyone tends to like look at the later V memes and put everybody there. And Spiral Dynamics, actually, they'll say like, no, like most people are like an overwhelming majority of people are purple most of the time. And people also tend to like identify with a V meme and forget the dynamics of Spiral Dynamics and say, well, you know, for example, a medical practitioner is orange, and you did good nuances saying when they make medical decisions. What the pandemic is showing me is people really are just beige, purple, red most of the time. And I don't like myself included. And so we'll have these moments where we do kind of structural thinking or strategic thinking, where we'll have a moment of like our highest achieved V meme, and then we just drop it into our guts. We don't stay there.
Yeah.
And so for me, what it's revealed is just how purple, red Americans especially are.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't see any evidence that orange or blue are operating at any significant capacity in any of the American political coalitions. Because if we think about what it means to be purple, it means to be loyal to your group at all costs. Like no matter what, go along with the tribe. And like, if the Republican Party or evangelicals were blue, there's no age of Trump. Trump violates constitutional norms every day. And Trump, you know, violates the moral standards laid out in scriptures like ceaselessly. So a blue culture would go, nope, this is not okay. But a purple culture would totally fall behind this throbbing red tyrant. And, you know, Donald Trump, I get the sense that he just does have the one V meme, right? Like he's just red all the time. He's power ego, ride or die.
But
what I'm noticing as well is like the progressive left coalition, they'll be green and orange, like thinking injected into it, but it's the same thing. It's like the central point of identity becomes the affiliation with a given group, not some line of thinking or reasoning or ideology. And so it's for spiral damage is really reframe thing. Like, forget yellow or integral or whatever. Like, there's not that much blue in the world, much less orange or green.
And I think, so one question we have that I want to talk about is just identifying the colors kind of quickly, so we make sure that we're kind of on the same page. But then as a follow-up to that, what I think is interesting and where spiral dynamics gets really useful is that I think you're right that we operate in purple and red, beige, purple, and red most of the time. But we have expanded within certain conversations up to and through yellow. So we're using that language a lot. And so what do we mean when people are borrowing orange language or green language or all that, even if, because Trump is using blue language to justify red behavior.
Yes.
Like red is his operating, but he's using blue language all the time to justify it. So knowing that nuance is to say, because it looks like blue, but it's not blue. In any meaningful way. So let's quickly, we can talk about the colors, and I love your kind of summation, and then I'd be interested in having a part of that conversation. How do people adopt different language of V-memes to justify?
All right. So spiral dynamics, the name actually explains it really well. The spiral and the dynamics are a comprehensive description of the whole thing. Spiral dynamics is an attempt to unify personal growth and development as a person with cultural and societal growth, showing that they go through similar stages. And the whole premise of spiral dynamics is that organisms adapt to their environment, but humans do something special. Humans adapt their environment, and they do it so much that humans have to then adapt to the adaptations they have made in the world, which is somewhat unique to our species. And so the spiral is that, where we start with an environmental circumstance, and then the way people respond to it. The way people respond to it creates a new environment that now people have to respond to, and it spirals up that pattern. We change the world, and the world changes us in return. And each of those collections of an environment and human adaptation creates what's called a V-meme. And a V-meme is a set of constraints on beliefs and worldview. It doesn't say what you believe. It just puts kind of bounds on what ideas can be incorporated into your worldview. And there are six kind of established. They're done in colors. The colors have been given much meaning after the fact. Originally, it was just from little slides. And I don't mean PowerPoint slides. I mean like film slides that went in a slide projector Claire Graves, who's one of the principal architects of spiral dynamics originally, just asked a research assistant to give some color to the slides so they'd be more interesting. So those ended up becoming like into the whole world of spiral dynamics. So
I did not know that. And that is fascinating. Yeah. That we're like, well, yeah, the communal ones, those are the lighter colors, softer colors. These are like the red, hotter colors. Fascinating.
And right. And all that is valid. I get really into the like, because people get so like utopianist with spiral dynamics. I like to go back to like, this was like a professor carrying slides to rooms to pitch. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Now Beck certainly added a lot more sophistication, which is why, you know, Nelson Mandela and Nike have both used spiral dynamics for planning.
I did not know that. That's fantastic.
All true. Yeah. So there's these six V memes. They have colors. There's beige, which is your basic like survival V meme. You can think of that as like babies and humans before civilization. And then up from that, you have purple, which is the animistic or mystical stage of consciousness. And that is where you get spirituality and unseen forces. This is people acquiring language and this individually. And this is early agrarian cultures. And then you have the power ego stage of consciousness, which is when toddlers start to stomp their feet and say no. And when cultures realize that warriors can beat up shamans. If you're the big guy in the community, then I should be the boss because I can kick your ass. And then blue is the, what's the name of it? It's the traditional stage of consciousness.
I believe so. Yeah. I'd have to pull up to make sure I'm not misremembering what the,
and that's basically like, when you start to get, have you ever noticed like every child, like grade school age child, is a fundamentalist morally? Like they're really like the first time a grade schooler hears their parent use profanity, they're like scandalized. Like that's, you can't do that. And we do that as a culture as well. That is when scripture, a holy scripture, becomes the defining moral value in a culture. Mm-hmm. And so that's like the foundation for all belief. And then after you're kind of a fundamentalist about rules and legalism and a single story being important, you start to ask why as a teenager or as a culture who begins to study the sciences. That introduces the orange or modern stage of consciousness. We don't mean modern as in contemporary. We mean modern as in modernism or modernity. And this is when you start to test all ideas with merit. And actually, it's super competitive at this stage. So like, it's not just the scientific method. The stock market is really orange. Justifying things is really orange. So the U.S. Constitution is a very orange document because it justifies its right to exist. So whereas a monarchy is blue, you have divine right. Why am I in charge? Because God said I'm in charge.
Yeah.
In orange, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Thank you, Hamilton, for making that so easy to remember. We the people of the United States, where we are showing where the authority to create law comes from. We are assigning the merit. That's very orange. And then orange leads you to ask so many questions about the world that it starts to take apart the blue notion that there's only one story for all people. And that introduces the green or world stage of consciousness, which is when you start to care about the earth and care about other perspectives, and you get really suspicious of hierarchy, and you want to overthrow hierarchical powers. Tech startups where the CEO is in an open floor plan with all the employees and, hey man, we're all just the same here. That's very green. I think that's the fastest I've ever gone through the six.
And helpfully. Yeah. Yeah. And if you have any questions, go ahead and throw them on Facebook. I was even kind of responding to some of them. So what I'm interested in is like you used even there, like, so the tech startup has like the open floor plan. But what I'm interested in going back to is it sounds like what you're saying is that that's like an aspirational, like that's maybe green might expose the top of the kind of thinking planning, but operationally it's purple and red, beige, purple, and red, those three kind of more primary modes. I'm interested in kind of hearing more about that. Is that something that you felt for a long time? Is that something that's evolved over time where you're like, I spent a lot of time studying orange and blue and purple and thinking orange, blue, and green, but I'm just more convinced that that's not, like, no one's actually functioning in those spaces.
Yeah, I don't think anyone. I don't think, I mean, maybe the Dalai Lama walks around just green. I doubt it. So when I grew up evangelical. So I believe that like we were all going to heaven one day. And as a post-evangelical, when I encountered, I was actually an atheist when I first heard about spiral dynamics. I got really caught up in spiral dynamics as telling a story of inevitable human progress. So it became almost a new redemption narrative for me, which is why I think so many people who have especially post-evangelical or Catholic or any kind of Western Christian context, they hear spiral dynamics and they go, okay, inevitable human progress, great. So then, you know, maybe I was wrong about the mechanism before, but there is still this notion to the redemption of all things, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens is people like they get what's the latest Femi and what's after that. And I almost, it becomes a search for like heaven on earth.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not what sprout, that is very integral.
Yeah.
That's a very integral way of understanding spiral dynamics. For spiral dynamics, the point of spiral dynamics is to create actionable plans for change. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a more honest acknowledgement of where people are and how hard living is, right?
Yeah.
So I resisted that idea for years. I was like, no. We are moving to green right now, and soon the whole world will be, you know, yellow, this integral stage of consciousness.
Yeah.
And before COVID, climate change really called that into question, because if the political left coalition in America, in the United States, is operating kind of orange green, and if the right was blue, there should be a really easy coalition to form around the data says we can care for the earth, and for blue, the scriptures say earth care is important and self-sacrifice is important. Like, that's lauded in the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, there's kind of like, screw you, I got mine, is like the great American view. It's very red.
Yep.
And so I started to get kind of bearish on the later V memes having any role in our daily lives, not our societal structures, but our daily lives around climate. And then COVID hit, and you know, just the utterly backward way in which we've responded in the West. Sure. And then the like much better response generally in Eastern cultures. But does that mean like Eastern cultures are all green orange? Or does it mean spiral dynamics is so Western, like it doesn't even speak into the global East or really the global South at all?
Yeah.
And so I think that second one is more likely. I've had friends who are spiral dynamics fans who get really mad at me for being like, nope, it literally means nothing in China. It means nothing. And you know what I mean? Like, other than the degree to which colonialism has impacted those cultures, you're taking spiral dynamics as a model. Mm-hmm. Models have limitations. And I think using spiral dynamics to describe what's happening in China is like trying to use hurricane forecast models to describe California wildfires. Like, that's not what this model does.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, but even in the West, and also spiral dynamics says that when we face stress and difficulty, some people are pushed to a higher V meme to solve their problem. This is not a question of merit. This is a brain trying to survive. So some are pushed, forced to a newer V meme in order to try to solve the problem. And most people, and this is, as someone who loves brain science, this is dead on how we understand brains. Most people regress to an earlier V meme.
Sure.
That their brain goes, well, I know how to get through this.
Yeah.
Where's some Oreo cookies?
Yeah.
Like, or where's a bottle of vodka, or you know, let's Netflix binging is a real beige move, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we arguably should be using the cerebral capacity of our brains to do collective problem solving, The combination of red hoarding resources, rich getting richer, powerful getting more powerful, and everybody else kind of being thrown to the virus. People, I think it's generous to say, I think we're beige and we get moments of purple and red.
Sure. Yeah.
In the pandemic.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Asked me a question and then I just 5 minutes of blah, blah, blah.
But it was good. It was good to talk through, because I think it is helpful to say, hey, in pandemic, people are going to, because that's always been true with spiral dynamics, or within the model of spiral dynamics, is that moments of intense kind of threat will, people will operate in beige and just pure survival.
Right.
And so, and another way that helps me think of that, when you look at the brain science of that, is like in those moments of scarcity or a fear about a threat that's out there, amygdala is going to do a lot more work. Mm-hmm. We're just going to fight, flight, or freeze. And so it helps, you know, capture some of that. I think what I'm interested in is how are we, because we're still creating structures on these later V memes. So even if that's not, so I'm interested in what's the relationship between those, because we use green justification, but there's a number of different factors, like, so if like Green New Deal would be kind of a, and that's a one-to-one kind of a green V meme justification. But if it doesn't have purple tribal backing, it's really hard to get it to move forward.
Yes.
So what's the relationship between our aspirational structures, are kind of these later V memes, but without the earlier V memes functioning and working, it really doesn't matter. It's not going to gain any traction. It's not going to have the power. And instead of thinking of them as like, well, it's this V meme or this V meme, instead say, no, what's the relationship between these V memes and how do we...
So that was one thing that's really interesting to me. Like, so when we heard about spiral dynamics, we basically got Bellian spiral dynamics, which is like Rob reads the spiral dynamics people. He reads the integral people. He grabs the things he think are compelling from both and then creates this new thing that isn't either of those.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, that's what Rob does. It's like, super, super high integrative intelligence. And integral as a meme on the Wilbur side, the integral side, is like kind of utopianist.
Sure.
But yellow in spiral dynamics is super cynical. So it's like yellow is like this meta V meme, where the V-meme becomes aware that V-memes exist, even if it's intuitively. And in spiral dynamics, yellow is terrified of exposure and doesn't want anyone to know it exists because it feels vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a big difference in the two schools of thought.
Sure.
Also on the spiral dynamics side, yellow is like, this is theoretical. We don't know if this is real. Mm-hmm. On the integral side is like, this is where we're all moving. And so yellow starts to use the V memes manipulatively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think like, that's where you see an intentional effort to make orange or green language the currency of purple population distributions.
Yes.
So
let's stop. Say that again, because if I'm understanding what you're saying there, it's that purple, which is like this tribal, we have to agree, we have to belong, like this is our survival, is we're going to be in this together. The currency that's used to reinforce these tribes is orange ideas, green ideas, blue ideas. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, yeah. And it's really purple, like, doesn't scale.
Yeah.
Purple will scales to the point that everybody knows everybody in a group.
Mm-hmm.
But it you don't have a 50,000 person yeah. purple coalition. So red can come along and through might unite several purple communities together. So you can actually yep. scale the size of a community. And now the warrior king, he's only got to know the lieutenants that then interface mm-hmm. kind of with each of these tribes. You can scale up. And then blue can scale things up again, and blue can scale things up by creating a sacred text that then gets disseminated to all these purple communities and gives you a quick test of whether we're in the same tribe or not. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know you personally, but do you hold the tribal values, which now are written down? I'm not be able to read, but I hear a teacher give me these values over and over. And so I'm like, well, you know, I mean, gosh, how many times in my life have I been asked? So what do you think about the Bible? Because that's like a purple test for yeah. whether we're in the same tribe or not. And that doesn't mean everyone who's saying, well, do you believe the Bible is the word of God, is blue. It means no. blue language and methodologies are being used to scale a purple community larger than it could otherwise be. And once you get to blue, now you can have like civilization scale tribes.
Yeah.
But the thing about purple is purple's loyalty is often first to family and then to tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And blue's loyalty is to the text, the story, and then the tribe, and then the family.
Sure.
And so.
So as an example of that, and I know I'm interrupting you, but I want to make sure that we're for people who are watching, we're moving on the same, is if you think of like, we use a language a lot of like evangelical Christians in the United States, which hold some of these blue ideas that there's like a sacred text, some sacred ideas that are guiding it. But really all you're describing is a massive, very loose coalition of purple tribes, because they've already split off from each other hundreds and hundreds of times. If you got them all in the room, they would disagree on as much as they would agree with. So we're using kind of blue language because there are some similarities in like voting and different things that they do, but it's really not true to say that it is as cohesive as we use the language of. Or you
it's also why blue tends to be so much more successful in culture, because you use one story to wallpaper over the disagreements.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So yep. it like, if we get into, well, our tribe says this happens at the end of time, or our tribe says this happens at the time. And that, but wait, who's the Son of God? Jesus. Okay. We yeah. wallpaper over the significant differences and different values. Like, you know, if you think like, I'm fascinated by the pro-life movement in America.
Yes.
Like you roll back the clock a few decades, evangelicals thought of abortion as a Catholic issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there was huge differences in the evangelical communities about views on abortion. And those were wallpapered by a different value, the sanctity of the Bible and, you know, mm-hmm. Who Jesus was. And then there's a big movement to make abortion one of the big questions for evangelicals, which is a huge effort, a lot of messaging required, a lot of orange methodology required to disseminate these blue ideas. And suddenly abortion became like, I don't know, maybe now the big evangelical test, like maybe sure, above yeah. is Jesus the Son of God, is like, is oh, abortion yeah. allowed?
Yeah.
And it's just, I just find it funny, because if you talk to like a given evangelical or me when I was evangelical, I would have told you that's what the first Christians thought. I wouldn't yeah. have said like in 1940, no evangelical cared about abortion.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that certainly makes my most deeply held belief feel fragile.
Yes.
So that's the problem. Because if it is true that among progressives and the left, people are purple as well. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
A green value is we all have different stories and perspective. And so progressive communities tend to focus on and fight about their differences.
Sure.
At the expense of their capacity to organize. I mean, has there ever been a president more opposed by progressives and liberals in America than Donald Trump? No. And yet, huge number of progressives are complaining about their forced choice on a candidate they don't care about. Meanwhile,
yeah.
millions of evangelicals are voting for a pathological liar mm-hmm. who has extramarital affairs with porn stars and pays it off to keep it quiet.
Yeah.
And that's the difficulty of mapping green down to purple versus blue down to purple.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's helpful in understanding some of these concepts because it exposes what the wallpaper is, but on a granular level, that's not actually how people are functioning.
No.
That's helpful because when you see, I'm curious.
I want to pause.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think Kurt is, we're not talking about other people. I'm not sitting here saying I'm orange looking down on the purple masses. There's a lot of like, this is how I function as a person.
Yes.
Not just how other people function.
Every time you say something that I think might be different than something I've said before, I'm saying now, I'm getting very beige, even just during the Zoom call. Are we okay? Are we on the same team?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm interested. So does that help? Because again, for me, spiral dynamics is only as helpful as a particular model to take the insanity that being alive in 2020 in the United States of America and putting some frameworks around it to help me better see and understand, knowing that it's still totally limited. It doesn't explain everything. Like, I'm not putting it on the pedestal of if you get spiral dynamics, now it's like the secret code. It's not the red pill. It's not going to expose all the things, but it's a framework to say, oh, I think some of these, to describe the things that are going around, that without that language, I feel crazy seeing all this craziness around me. Mm-hmm. To that end, using that as kind of a preface, do you think that cancel culture, which is becoming more of a term, but it's equally present in Republican and Democratic circles, is another way of saying it's exposing the purple behind the blue or green wallpapers?
Yes and no.
Okay, great answer.
Like, yes, part of cancel culture is a purple energy of, we have to expunge this person from the tribe. But cancel culture is also like strategic
mm-hmm.
and orange. I actually think cancel culture is driven by red energy
mm-hmm.
and that energy, like Donald Trump knocked over the political establishment on the right like that. Why? Purple was angry and disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And they're like, screw your blue.
Yeah.
If this guy's actually going to fight for us, okay, we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why Bernie is so popular.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie is the red energy on the left of like, these people aren't paying attention. Bernie like is very popular.
Yep.
Especially among younger people. And so I think cancel culture is also just purple going red and saying there has to be some accountability. And by the way, we talk about cancel culture. Most of the people who get canceled are still fabulously wealthy.
Yeah.
They usually like get a book deal to talk about being canceled.
Yes, like, exactly.
Let's see. Harvey Weinstein was successfully canceled, and he was basically acting like the embodiment of Lucifer. To get canceled, there had to be so many things that people were just like, that courts of law were like, this is clearly illegal. Yep. You know what I mean? And and it was so bad that people were like, okay, I can't carry this guy's water. But if you look at it, most people get canceled, like they're weeping away their emotional pain at $2,500 a week retreat centers, right? Like, it's just
our usage of cancel culture and how many times it's actually happened are vastly disproportionate.
Like, and, you got canceled means like you had a couple of bad days on Twitter.
Yeah. You've got some mean DMs for something that you should have to pay account for, these things that you have done in life.
And here's the other thing. I get really fired up about this.
Yeah.
People usually don't actually like want your head on a stick.
Yeah.
I have been, I think, on the threshold of being canceled before. Mm-hmm. And when I, if you listen and pay attention and people actually have good feedback and you sincerely apologize, it just vanishes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Now I get not, oh, I guess like, you know, the people have done blackface or whatever.
Totally.
That's a different thing. But I mean, a lot of times cancel culture actually means like people are called out for something and held accountable and then they just get pissed and fight back.
Yeah.
And then, it's like they have a bad PR experience and 2 years later they come back with their book or their tour or whatever. And so I don't know. The whole critique of cancel culture is just not one I can really get behind.
I'm in the same way, because it's another instance where it seems that people in power are using that language to maintain their power and to discredit the statements that are being made that need to be taken into account. And if you can have language where you can just call it cancel culture,
right,
it can be like you're changing the focus of what the conversation is actually about.
Right.
But you're right. When people are saying, hey, this is problematic, and you're like, absolutely, it's problematic. I see that. I take account for that. And I want to take steps to change. That's not cancel culture. No one sought out to cancel you as an individual because of these decisions. But they did want to say, you're seeming to present as a particular thing that is actually not true. So how do we take account of that? Mm-hmm. And using the language of spiral dynamics, I'm interested in how people respond in red or people respond to that. But the thing that's really being called out is that purple, you're not a part of our tribe. These things aren't the values that we hold, and yet you're posing through. Let me take a step back. Getting back to spiral dynamics, one of the things that I find most fascinating is how people present as a particular way, but systemically it's totally different. So the example I use a lot is there's a number of churches in particular that use green language because they know green language is something that is being used a lot culturally around them. Mm-hmm. Social justice, let's the cry of the oppressed, let's see the marginalized and value those voices. So people come to participate in those kinds of communities because it resonates with stated values of their own. But then they find out that the backbone of that isn't a green structure. It's a blue structure or a purple structure. And so they get up to a certain point and they're like, well, wait, you're not open and affirming? Like, my identity isn't welcome here? Mm-hmm. And they're like, no. Whereas there's no way that could fly in a truly green structure. But we use language and we present as certain V memes because we know it's helpful to attract people. But the backing of it is not that. To me, that's really interesting because it helps you parse through the messages you're receiving. But when you call it to account based on its stated values, you find out, yeah, but those were never its stated values. Mm. Those values aren't actually driving the ship. That's not actually what's in charge here. And I might be projecting too much of my own thoughts and opinion on what you're saying, but that's what I'm hearing you saying. Like, it's mostly beige, it's mostly purple, it's mostly red is how we're actually functioning. But we're, what makes it so confusing is, but we're using all these other languages to identify.
Yeah, purple just wants to fit in.
Yeah.
And so when corporations, which have a very orange methodology to their operation, corporations' jobs are to, no matter what VMM you are, to indoctrinate orange language and behaviors onto their employees. And they're always trying to out-innovate each other, out-compete each other in marketing communications to sell more widgets. So when they spend billions of dollars a year to harp on green language, because they're always trying to be just ahead of culture, and in doing so, they change culture, they're training a bunch of purple people to, like, value smiling black women and polar bears and all these images. And they, it starts to impact, like, what is good? What does it mean to be good in this tribe?
Yeah.
What does it mean to be good in America? And so then churches not operating from a green center of gravity, certainly, not generally, they're like, well, we got to copy these terms now. But it works. That's the thing that kills me. Like, it works. There are so many churches in Los Angeles with, like, queer celebrities in the pews who aren't affirming, and those people don't realize it because they hear the right the right coding. Honestly, it's green coding. And if the coding is right, people go, oh well, I must be in the right place. And then they're like shocked when they find out, what do you mean this church won't perform a same-sex wedding ceremony? Yeah, I mean, it's terrible.
So a question for you, and then putting out there to anyone who's watching, any questions that come up for you all, we want to get to them in kind of the next little bit of time that we have. So a question for you is, what tools would you, or what advice would you give someone on any kind of structure? So we just talked about church as a structure, but on any kind of system or structure that's out in the world, to litmus test it based on its stated value behind its true operation? Or is that, there's no way of really doing that unless you've been embedded in that tribe or that system long enough? Because for me, a lot of times when it comes to churches, is when you're an open and affirming pastor in a kind of more evangelical church settings, a lot of people want to talk to me and, like, well, how did you get here? How did you? And every time I'm like, I don't think I'm going to change your beliefs on this. So my only call is, be crystal clear about what you believe as an organization with everybody, because you're creating so much harm by not being clear with your stated values and what you'll actually be held accountable to. And so how do people that are hearing that language that appeals to them and resonates with them and the kind of systems and structures they want to be a part of, and so they join, and it's so painful to have invested, and now you become relationally intertwined with these organizations, and then find out, oh wait, this doesn't hold the same values at all. How do you negotiate that? And then if you have any other questions, toss them away.
It's too good a question, Kurt.
That is a great way of giving yourself time, and I'll allow it, but it's not that great of a question.
It is a great question, or at least it's one I have a very difficult time answering.
Sorry.
Clarity has a cost. I actually understand strategically where the ambiguity comes from.
Yeah.
Because thank goodness social change activists have done such a great job in this country of making it inclusion along lines of orientation, sexual orientation, the tribal value, especially among young people. We're not there on gender identity yet, unfortunately, but I think, you know, we've amazing work on orientation. And so the lack of clarity is like a survival mechanism. The problem is if you're clear, at least right now, you might as well put a sign on the front door that says, please, no Christians with money who give to the church. So there's like a lot of like young people who are spiritually leaning, maybe I'd call them like Christian curious, who are interested in some sort of spiritual community. They either don't have much money or like giving's not a value.
Yeah. So you're talking specifically about churches that state we are open and affirming.
Your question is so big, I have to get specific to even try to grab it.
No, it's helpful. I just wanted to specify, you're not saying churches that aren't open and affirming, it would be akin to saying, don't give us money.
No, churches who aren't are saying, we've got the funders, we want to keep the funders. We also don't want to close the doors 20 years from now because no young people come to this church.
Sure, yeah.
And then on the other side, you have people like, no, we're going to do the right thing. And then the Christian funding base is just not moving at all towards, not at least not right now.
How I've said it is people that say that LGBTQ plus individuals can't be allowed into levels of leadership, or you can't condone their wedding ceremonies, who read that literally in the Bible, also read a tithe literally in the Bible.
Right.
That Venn diagram is an overlapping circles.
So, in terms of like how we parse that out in a given community, the marketing work of Green and Orange have done our work for us.
Yeah.
Because these communities all try to mimic each other. Like a rainbow on the steeple. Congratulations. There is green language encoded into this purple community. And therefore actually green values too. I mean, that's the thing that like I missed originally in Spot Dynamics is how readily the V memes masquerade as one another.
Yeah.
And how incredibly hard it is to discern when a given V meme is actually operating in a culture.
Yeah.
So like, and let's be clear, like the Spiral Dynamics Institute and the people behind that, like they don't come in and give a talk for 2 hours on Spiral Dynamics. They come in with researchers and do a large scale project over a period of months or years to figure out how V memes are at play. So I almost feel like I'm more of a Spiral Dynamics purist than an integral person.
Sure.
Trying to quickly assess the V memes of a given church, I don't actually think fits in the Spiral Dynamics model.
Yeah.
You would need to do like cohort studies and interviews, and you would need a couple of research assistants and postgraduate level expertise.
Yeah. So maybe another way of answering kind of the practical question, because overlapping it with Spiral Dynamics isn't helpful.
Yeah.
Is to be able to find not what is a system's stated values, but what are the values by which they're willing to be held accountable to.
Yes.
And I don't know all the ways that you do that, but I mean, we had someone, I think it was Brandy Miller was preaching, one of my favorite messages we've ever had at Cascade. It was fantastic. And what she said is when you say Black Lives Matter, she use the passage of Jesus saying, like, you love those who love you, so what? She said, the way of understanding in 2020 is you say Black Lives Matter. Even Amazon does that.
Damn, that is good.
Killer line. So it's not what sign are you willing to put on your front yard? It's what, which of these values are you willing to, is your, have your life be held accountable to, which is another way when you're in systems to be able to sort out. All right. One question for the end of our time. What are the challenges of a church, and we can broaden it to a system, that's wanting to be racially diverse in light of spiral dynamics? Does the spiral dynamics model have anything to say? Again, going back to stating that spiral dynamics is fairly white, Western, academic.
Why do you want to be racially diverse as a church? I think that's an important question. I want to be careful in my phrasing. So I'll be like, what do you mean? Why? I don't mean you shouldn't want to be. What I mean is, where's that desire coming in for you as a person, for you as a congregation? Yeah. Is it so you can go home and pat yourself on the back and feel like you beat racism? Or is it because you want your church to more accurately represent humanity? And what are you willing to change for your church to be more racially inclusive? Because when your church isn't racially inclusive, it's because it's culturally white. And from my conversations with people of color, especially Black people, the reason Sunday morning is so segregated is, my God, Black people need a space to just be Black and to not have to pay an emotional tithe to whiteness in a space, right? What sanctuary is it if you're Black to have to go code switch into whiteness on Sunday morning? And so you have, in my opinion, you have to do the work to be green and not use green values.
Yeah.
It means you have to be willing to hear and to understand and to meditate on the lived experiences of Black Americans. And then you have to be willing to change your church in a way that fully allows and celebrates Blackness. And that will make whiteness wildly uncomfortable. If you think you can like make a, I mean, there is kind of like a multicultural church model that basically relies on leaning deep into purple. It's like, we're all Christians first, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I've seen that work, but I think for transformational work to happen, I don't know how you have a, you know, a if you don't have Black people in leadership and empowered to make real changes in the organization, I don't even know why a church would even think about, we want to be a multiracial church. If you're not willing to have Latinx people empowered and in leadership, and if you're not willing to make stands that come along with that, you know, because whiteness is like, we're not political, we're not political, we're not political, we're not political means the status quo benefits me.
Yeah.
And I don't think churches should be partisan. I have no interest in a partisan church, but churches should be wildly political.
This was literally a slide on Sunday.
Really?
Church is political, not partisan.
Good. That doesn't surprise me with your church. But if politics, what we're talking about is how societies make decisions on resource allocation. That's what politics is.
Yep.
And if you're going to have a multicultural church, then you have to acknowledge and work against the current status quo of resource distribution in the United States. Because it's like, let's go orange. Mm-hmm. The spreadsheet like is unambiguous. Like, it's really hard to make a data-driven case that America is not a white supremacist state.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Last question that I saw, and I think this will, so someone asked, what color or using it is lent to conspiracy theories? My gut reaction is that it's purple helps explain it, but to say that purple is more bent towards conspiracy theories than others, I don't know, maybe. What are your thoughts on that? I can see people in red utilizing conspiracy theories. I can see people in blue utilizing conspiracy theories. Orange, I can't. Yeah, that's a tricky one.
So last night, I debuted a new show called The Cozy Robot Show.
Yeah.
Last night. And the first episode was on fake news and conspiracy theories.
It's great timing. Great
timing. So I did an hour on this last night. And so if you're a YouTube person, or actually anywhere, Facebook, Instagram TV, go look up The Cozy Robot Show episode 1. I do an hour on this. But research has found the last couple of years that people are more likely to engage in conspiratorial thinking, and they have a higher predilection to accept conspiracy theories when they are anxious or when they feel alienated and isolated.
Yeah.
So those terms make me think beige and purple. Sure. Conspiracy theories are a means of trying to assert control over a frightening environment. And here's what I said last night on the show. Let's talk about COVID-19 conspiracy theories. Let's go specific. One, this is a real conspiracy theory that people talk about and believe, that Bill Gates, the co-founder of Microsoft, created COVID-19 to depopulate the earth.
Yep.
That's a real thing, which sounds ridiculous. But if you think about it from human psychology and from beige and purple, the reality is an indifferent mutating virus is causing a complex global pandemic that we don't have a clear strategy to get out of. Is a vaccine going to work? We don't know.
Yep.
What therapies are going to be available? We don't know. How long are we going to be masking? How long is indoors gatherings going to be unwise? We don't know. Mm-hmm. We could be fine in December. We could still be in this 5 years from now. Both of those are equally unlikely. And the truth is somewhere in the middle, but we could really have 2 or 3 more years easily where it's not safe to gather indoors. And that makes you feel so disempowered, this faceless, indifferent enemy. But if Bill Gates did it, well, we can drag Bill Gates into court. We can make him give us the secret antidote. It not only provides meaning making and identity, and like, I found the secret hidden knowledge, and now I'm part of this group that knows the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives us a sense of control, because in a conspiracy theory, almost universally, something complex and ultimately almost unaddressable gets a face and a name and an adversary that we can oppose on human terms.
Yeah.
And that, to me, I mean, I'm not an academic. I haven't read this. This is my analysis and my thoughts. But that, to me, that's beige purple.
Yeah. I also love the idea of finding a bat and pulling off the bat mask and having it be Bill Gates. And he's like, and I would have gotten away with it too. Was for you meddling kids. And that Bill Gates is Thanos is the other image that came into my head.
And Bill Gates is like quiet, unassuming. Yes. Like, I made billions and now I'm just going to go philanthropy. Like, he's smart. He could still be running the game. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm going to go distribute vaccines.
But that's so, it's so helpful to know that if I can create a narrative, because one of the things with conspiracy theories that's so hard is like, okay, well, even if Bill Gates did create it to take out, it doesn't mean that you get to go outside without a mask on. Like, it still doesn't, it doesn't answer that question, but it's helpful in that framing. It's not trying to answer that question. It's,
And this gets a little conspiracy theory myself, but I have no question or very little question that there aren't orange PR operatives. Orange has an objective and uses data. They look at the data. Conspiracy theories shift public sentiment quickly. I think some conspiracy theories are manufactured by different interests to manipulate groups of people.
Mm-hmm. A conspiracy theory about conspiracy theories?
You're going to have one. Why not that?
I mean, that is the mother of all conspiracy theories. I love it. Do I believe in conspiracy theories? Not a single one of them. But do I believe in the conspiracy theory to explain conspiracy theories? Absolutely.
Well, the trick there is I don't actually think there's a conspiracy. I think like a political action committee hires a PR firm. Yeah. And the PR firm has like one internet dude. And they're like, we don't care how you do this. Just shift the sentiment.
Shift public opinion. He's
you
like,
got
I got
3 weeks to move this 4 points. And he goes,
yep.
Vaccines yep. cause autism.
Yep.
And although we actually know where that one came from. So that's a bad example. But.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's always, it's good to see your face.
It's good to see your face.
Check in on your beard and your grooming, which is, again, fantastic.
Doing my best.
Take a victory lap.
Sincerely doing my best.
You are. You are. And I am excited. You guys should check out Cozy Robot Show. I love you're launching a new thing. You put a lot of work, put a lot of time into it. And if it's Mike McHarg, it's worth checking out.
Yeah. We had a good first episode. And it's live. It's a live show every Monday at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And then you can just watch it whenever you want throughout the week. But if you want to be part of the live thing, what's really fun is I put a little monitor up and I read, because it's on Facebook and YouTube and Twitch and Twitter all at once. And I can see everybody's chat comments across all 4 platforms as I'm doing the show. So fun.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good for you to be able to keep track of all those. That gave me a little bit of anxiety. I was just trying to look at your face, have a conversation with you and track what was happening on Facebook, and I need to go take a nap. So
yeah,
I love
it's tiring.
All right, Mike. Good to see you as always. Thanks for everybody who tuned in. And hopefully it won't be long before I see you again.
Thanks,
Kyle. All right. See ya.